unpack Portland culture with the Artslandia box. One special experience, one treat, 1 month at a time. We'll curate a year of artistic adventures. You just have to open the box every month and explore. For you, for your friends, for your best clients. Order your Artslandia box at artslandiabox.com and do it now. These exclusive boxes launch in September.
Hi everyone, we are here for another installment of Adventures in Artslandia, and I'm so lucky to have Emily Lau here sitting with me, who's going to tell us everything there is to know about the Big Mouth Society, which is going to have a big gala event at Holocene on July 29th. Emily is a recent transplant from Boston 3 years ago, and tell us about why you're here and what you're doing, because it's very exciting.
Okay, so first of all, you have to know that Portland is my home.
Oh, okay.
Really my home. We bought a house here, and the most important thing for me is to build a community here that will sustain the fact that I'm here forever.
Right.
So 3 years ago, I moved from Boston, and before that, you can best describe me as a competitive gigster. So the typical route on the East Coast when you're a musician, classical musician, is you do your undergrad. Probably you go from some sort of performance arts high school. I did mine in England. Came to US, did undergrad, then competitively gig for a few years.
Did you do the churches and the all those
Oh,
types of
absolutely.
Jobs? Right. My mom graduated from Juilliard, and you know, I sang, she's Jewish, and I sang in churches, I sang in synagogues, I said music is international language.
It's exactly like that. And then graduate school, and then Boston is a really competitive place, but it's a really good place for a 20-something-year-old to get really good at what they do. However, what's interesting about that whole scene I have learned for myself is it's motivated by fear. So I like to use this analogy of there are two types of people, I believe. One is a line cook, people who are really skillful, but they're just taking orders in the arts. You know, someone has an idea and then they're really good at executing it. And then there are chefs, real chefs, who are coming up with original ideas and mobilizing all of these different chefs or line cooks. And slowly I realized that what I really want to do is not line cooking. I would like to be a chef. Because
that's a great analogy.
Yeah, I have something to say. However, I was still terrified all the time. So I was in my 20s and everybody was terrified. So that was one side of the coin. By that point, I was touring everywhere, internationally, nationally. But still, the fear is what motivates me, you know? And the other side of me was always into activism. So I was working, volunteering in, you know, local organizations, working with homeless people, doing prison outreach, basically on my own. And I did not see a way to kind of merge the two things together. And the third thing is always I want to build communities. Again, these three things don't work together at that point in my 20s. Then something crazy happened. Do you know there was a shipwreck called the Costa Concordia? Have you heard of a shipwreck that happened 5 years ago,
it 6 years ago? Familiar.
So that was a crazy shipwreck in Italy where...
Yes. The captain, I remember... Remember this,
It's a crazy story.
Yes.
So at the end, 32 people died, and I was on that ship.
No, my goodness.
It was my honeymoon.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So I'm going to make a very long story really short.
Oh, golly, so, it sounds fascinating.
It is. It's a whole different podcast.
Wow.
So we almost died. We were hanging on a rope for 5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember when we were running around on the ship thinking we're going to die. So we said goodbye. We said this is the best marriage ever. It's kind of short, but it was great. And I remember also thinking to myself, if I don't die on the other side of this, things have to change. I need to make sure that my life is not about fear of missing out, fear of not getting the next gig. I really need to just do what I believe. That was in my 20s, late 20s, so it was wonderful. And luckily we didn't die. So when we came out of the whole ordeal, we both had my husband and I both have horrible PTSDs. And we got therapy really, really bad. It was really difficult for me to go through the year performing. And at the end of the therapy, the therapist said, you know, if you guys are looking for justice, you probably won't find it because that's not how it works. But if you're looking for meaning, you're lucky because you both are artists. Find a way to make meaning out of this and you can get through this. So at that point, I thought, what I've always wanted to do is to make sense of the whole ordeal. And before the shipwreck, I love everybody. Like, my whole life is always about like loving people and wanting to do the best for them. But how does that go into my music if I'm singing other people's music? It doesn't make sense to me. I can't sing a Bach B minor mass or do a medieval drama play that has something to do with this. So I decided to write my own music. And basically, immediately, I thought, oh, you can't do that. You don't have a doctorate degree from Harvard. It might be strange to the Portland audiences, but on the East Coast, that's how you think. I don't have a doctorate degree from Juilliard, or you can't do anything. Mm-hmm. But I decided, you know what? I didn't die in a shipwreck. I'm going to do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. So I wrote an entire album. I produced it. Mm-hmm. And it was good. It was really quite not bad.
I'm just curious, where can people look for it if they'd like to listen and
purchase?
It's
called Isle of Lucidity. Mm. And you can find it anywhere on the internet, iTunes or, you know, Spotify, all of that. So after that, my husband and I started doing this motivational speech circuit a little bit because we realized that most people have gone through something difficult in their lives. Mm. And a lot of people are stuck in the cycle of seeking justice, while finding meaning is probably a little bit more effective for them, or getting therapy, facing the fear.
In terms of happiness.
In terms of happiness.
Yes. You know, or contentedness.
Yeah.
Happiness is a little bit maybe complicated.
Yeah.
But contentedness works for me, I think.
Yes. So after that, it's like a floodgate just opened. Mm-hmm. My work changed, it transformed. So there was a professional ensemble that I started in graduate school called The Broken Consort. And we went from doing just early music, that's my graduate degree in medieval and Renaissance music, to all kinds of work, new work, political work, things that reflect, you know, greater reality of life. And then I started going on this journey of like exploring what am I trying to do as an artist? Just making pretty sounds is no longer enough for me. And how do you make a sustainable living touching people's lives? So that's right around then that we moved to Portland, because we decided that actually Portland would be a better place where people are more heart-oriented and centered and care about the kind of stuff that I cared about.
And how did you choose Portland?
Kind of randomly. Don't laugh at me. We watch a lot of Portlandia.
I would imagine that a lot of people choose Portland for the same reason.
We watch a lot of Portlandia. I've toured to Portland before. Mm-hmm. I like the air. Mm-hmm. And we came here twice to really experience it. And it just felt like home every time.
Mm-hmm. What's your cultural background?
I'm from Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Born and raised in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And then I went to high school in England. Mm-hmm. So then I moved to Portland. I started a small studio in the southeast.
A voice studio?
Originally, I was just renting a space so that I can have quiet time to compose and teach a couple of voice students. I did not think of anything bigger. Then people started to come to me and say, we need a teacher who can teach high-level adults in ensembles and solo singing and early music. And I really reluctantly said yes. And then that turned into a kind of a big thing. Oh. And then I also realized that what I don't like sometimes about this traditional concert setting is how alienating it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's great sometimes. Mm-hmm. We need that to have the four walls to be separated from that magic. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I also really like the salon environment where you're right in front of the person and they are frail, they're people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started doing these salons maybe 5 to 8 times a year at the studio, where 50 people would get together and make music and poetry for each other.
We're going to have to invite you to Late Night Piano Bar at Artist Repertory Theater, because
it's exactly like
I can relate to what you're doing. And then Chris Hubbard, a pianist in town, is wonderful, has created a culture of something similar with American Musical Theater predominantly, but it really kind of, my hope eventually is that it's going to pour out into a larger community of music
yes.
gathering together lots of genres.
So we have lots of genres at the salons.
That's great.
And basically anybody comes to me with an idea, I say yes. Mm-hmm. Someone wanted to do a cut piece by Yoko Ono. Mm-hmm. I said, you can.
Right.
And then before we know it, we're all cutting clothes off of this guy's fabric, cutting fabric off of this guy's clothes, and
right.
we're all crying.
Oh.
So sometimes saying yes leads to wonderful things.
Yes.
So I'm kind of dragging on a little bit. But
no, I don't think you're dragging on a bit.
Good.
I'm loving it.
So last year, so for many years, I've been thinking about doing something about the body, kind of talking about why are we so uncomfortable with bodies and what is it like to have a feminine body? Mm. And also the topic of a lot of people say, oh, men are really oppressive about women's body. But sometimes, personally, I feel like women are so oppressive about other women's body, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with this idea and called a couple friends. And I said, let's do a show where we put this whole theory to the test. We're going to have a performance art show. It's going to be around an hour. So each there are going to be three artists. And all of them are professional dancers / musicians / poets and composers.
Mm-hmm.
They can do all of it. And for each person, they're responsible for around 20 minutes of materials. And in the other 40 minutes, you are just a servant of the other two people. You have to completely surrender.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to kind of agree that that's what they want.
Now, you mean as a performing artist on stage?
Yes.
You're on stage in service to another performer.
Yes, their vision.
I see. So you are their either stage manager or scene partner or whatever they
you're
ask.
You're their line cook.
You're their line cook. Oh, I see.
Whatever it is that they want,
either.
Including taking off all of your clothes.
Okay. I was just thinking, I don't know why that came to mind. I thought, I wonder if there's going to be nudity. Because I thought about this a lot because I have two daughters, both of whom are athletes. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, is always just really encouraging me. Mom, you have a beautiful body. Mom, you know, I look at myself in this thing and I see this muffin top. And I just don't like how it looks, or I'm rehearsing a show right now and I'm in dance clothes and I see myself in the mirror and it's a thing.
It is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we were nude 80% of the time.
Oh my gosh, that's uh-huh. amazing.
It was really hard.
Oh gosh, I can imagine.
It was really hard. So the prep work was I sat in front of a mirror every day
mm-hmm.
until I'm not criticizing myself anymore.
Oh my goodness.
And you sit a little bit longer. And you're not on a diet, you're not exercising, because that's the point.
Right. That's... Or you're doing what you want to do.
Yes.
I mean, because for me, if I look, I said, well, I could lose 10 pounds, I'm so inclined, but I'm just not so inclined. I got home last night, I'm like, I do want a glass of wine.
Yes. So it turned out really great. We ended up putting on a show called Sing Me Naked. And the three acts have very different themes. One of them was about this girl who was abused as a child sexually. It's her story. All of these are our own stories
mm-hmm.
and how she grew up trying to overcome a lot of this familial burden and to become a professional dancer.
Mm-hmm.
The second scene was mine. It kind of is the insider view of what it is like to have my body
mm-hmm.
and the whole history of it. It's kind of abstract.
Mm.
And the third one was a recreation of a Botticelli painting, mm. the Primavera, mm. and it's a clown act. It's really, really funny. So why am I talking about all of this? Is that...
Probably in service to the event coming up.
In a way, yes. Mm. I have been taking all these risks going forward and trying to explore what it is, and I try to bring this into my teaching practice
mm-hmm.
and my entire community. And when so the show I did was around a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Even back then, I felt like I did not know anybody in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I was just doing it by myself.
Mm.
You know, I have some classical-ish musicians coming, and I have some friends. It felt really disconnected still. I was not keyed into the scene.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm. And in town, I also tour with Capella Romana. I perform with
Fortin
Parallel. I'm in the whole circuit.
In the classical world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But now, I am this weird person who is in the classical world, hardcore,
mm-hmm.
also compose and do weird things,
mm-hmm.
do prison outreach,
mm-hmm.
but also do these crazy work
mm-hmm.
that no one in the classical world would do. There are colleagues who, after seeing me naked, wouldn't talk to me anymore.
Mm. It's really interesting because I would venture, just putting it out there, that they were probably all wanting that for themselves.
Yes.
Deep in their heart.
Yes.
Many.
Yes.
I'd say, because, you know, we're in our mental corsets. We got rid of the corset physically, mm-hmm. but it still holds us back.
Yeah. So miraculously, my students were really moved by that. Mm-hmm. They're all adults. I don't teach kids. Mm-hmm. And the community kind of flourished from that mm-hmm. in a crazy way. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought, oh, she's not a liar. Mm-hmm. When she said you have to actually open up your entire being to be an artist and to own it and build a community, like, she's not lying.
Right. So you put your money where your breasts are.
So I suddenly have more and more people in the community, and it's getting really vibrant and really exciting, and mm-hmm. the synergy is wonderful. And I said, you know what? It's time for me to bring my professional ensemble on the East Coast to Portland mm-hmm. because I can't keep flying East Coast. It's too stressful for me. Mm-hmm. But how do I also have a place for them to perform that would be fair? Mm. One thing I notice in Portland is Portland really kind of doesn't like to pay musicians
yes.
or artists. And it is a problem to me. It's
yes.
really troubling to me.
Well, it speaks to, there are a lot of issues about pay that is equitable.
Yes.
A living wage.
Correct.
I find the word honorarium
yeah.
often.
Yes.
And that usually means not enough to cover your travel costs.
Correct. So now you see I have all of these problems, mm. right, to solve, which mm. is, how do you make really interesting world-class art in Portland mm. while treating people equitably?
Right.
How do you also have a community that's kind and supportive, and that is all levels? It's not just the professionals, but all of the amateurs and all of the supportive structure.
Mm-hmm.
How do you speak a greater truth with your art
mm-hmm.
that touches people? And then I want to add a few things onto it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sustainably fund projects without government funding?
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
And can you, you know, get a RAC grant or Oregon Arts Commission, or who are the people that are wanting to nurture this kind of work?
Yes.
For the betterment, as you said earlier, of a better life.
Yes.
Not in search of being the gigster.
Yes. So that these things I have done with other ensemble and with my own ensemble. And also, how do you not rely on major rich people
mm-hmm.
to fund your projects?
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened is when you're beholden to grants, when mm-hmm. you're beholden to rich people,
mm-hmm.
you're also always in fear. Because what if they back out? What if what you do is not fun for them?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. It happens every day.
Right.
What if the regime change
mm-hmm.
and suddenly there's no money?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been brainstorming and thinking and talking to everybody. And miraculously, a team of people emerge
mm-hmm.
and all wants to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them emerged because they saw The Naked Show, actually,
mm-hmm.
and changed their life in some crazy way,
mm-hmm.
and now they want to give back. Some of them are from the studio. Some of them are just concerned citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are professional artists who feel very passionately about this. And suddenly we are forming a nonprofit.
And that's the Big Mouth Society.
And that's the Big Mouth Society.
So it's a perfect segue into the event on the 29th. Tell us about what's going to happen at Holocene.
So the 29th is the kickoff party, launch party. It's called the Rainbow Soiree. And we're going to have two world premieres of pieces performed by the Broken Consort. I wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the... is six settings of Hafez's poems about love and equality.
Oh, it's just weird, but the people I interviewed prior brought up Hafez, and as I just posted something on Facebook by Hafez, I mean, it just keeps coming.
Exactly.
That resonance.
Yep, and the second piece, second cycle, is called the Glorious Cantata.
Mm.
The Cantata. It is about the joy and challenges and all of the different nuances of, again, the feministic experience.
Mm.
And it doesn't exclude men.
Mm.
It's just, we have something to say about us too. It's
mm.
beautiful, it's complicated. And the musicians come from all around the country and the world.
Mm.
And they are my favorite people, all professional musicians. So that's one part of it. And we also have a lot of local visual and visual artists, fine artists, and also a improv troupe, storytellers, fortune tellers.
Might you be able to name some of the people that are participating?
I have a long list. I don't want to leave anybody out.
Okay.
So if you do go onto our Facebook, you see all of them.
All right.
It's just
and
we have like 25.
Find your Facebook page?
It's facebook.com/BigMouthSociety.
Great.
And if you want to go to our website, it's, of course, it's very new. So we're constantly experimenting with new UI. It is www.big-mouth.org.
Great. I'll put that up so everyone can take a look.
Yeah. So the idea is we as a society will not seek any government funding.
Mm.
We do not seek any patrons funding.
Mm.
So that means people would have to basically show up,
mm-hmm.
show up with a very modest fee. So what we're thinking is there are two types of membership.
Mm-hmm.
One is the community member, people who wants to go to things every month, including professional things, not professional things, informal gathering and art shows.
Mm-hmm.
And those are $15 a month for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Very affordable.
Yes.
And you will now have an instant family of people I know are wonderful
mm-hmm.
and put their money where their mouths are.
Right. And I know as an artist myself, the enjoyment you can derive from being in communication and in face-to-face contact with artists who are thinking a little differently, who can maybe bring some joy to your life that maybe
yes.
you weren't aware you could have.
And you know what's even better is mm-hmm. as a community member, you can host traveling artists
mm-hmm.
at your house. You can host really wonderful salons and meals and so you will get to be keyed, you get to key into the whole artistic scene of Portland.
You're a member.
But do you know what's even better?
Mm-mm.
We are pledging a really good pay rate for all of the artists.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you how much.
That's wonderful.
So we are just saying, we're setting an example for other organizations, I believe. We're
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, it's not a lot, but we're paying people for the week they work,
mm-hmm.
which is 40 hours,
mm-hmm.
$15 an hour, which
mm-hmm.
is $600 for a series, like
mm-hmm.
a concert series for
mm-hmm.
a weekend,
mm-hmm.
which already basically put us at the very top of Portland.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that sad? But at the same time, I think we have to start somewhere.
Right.
Correct.
And I think that you're showing, I think, for people who don't know what artists are paid, that this is an hourly rate that's just a tiny bit above the minimum wage.
Exactly.
And you're just, that's fantastic.
And think about going to a show, you feel so much. You're thinking, wow, these artists are really trained. They are amazing. And a lot of times they make $200 for the week.
Right. Or $100
you know?
For an event.
And isn't that nice to know that by giving $15 a month, you know that you're going to have a good time and people are treated fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a studio membership,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit more money, but you will be able to participate in all of the different classes and
mm-hmm.
ensembles taught by the best artists in town.
Wow, that's great.
So there's music, there's photography, there's movement, there's all kinds of stuff.
And is this for adults only?
Mostly for adults now.
Mm-hmm.
We have to start somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, and actually, I would say in Portland, there's a shortage of programs for adults who are really hardcore and serious.
Right, professionals.
Yeah.
Are you teaching acting and those types of things within the singing realm? Because I noticed that you're very connected
very
to
holistic.
The idea of communicating with music,
yes.
not just singing pretty sounds.
Correct. So yes, always.
Mm.
So all of the people that we have as teaching artists are not just teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They are in the field.
Mm-hmm.
They are known. They are wonderful, adventurous, kind.
Mm-hmm.
And these are important qualities to me.
Mm.
Yeah. And so also we're paying our teachers really well as well.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things, and we're building relationship with all of these major community stakeholders. We're having conversations with ERCO.
Mm.
We're having conversations with a lot of LGBTQ communities
mm.
and people of colors.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is we don't have to group people in one tiny group and present them things.
Mm-hmm.
We can just invite everybody to the table. And what we pledge is that all of our shows and performances are going to be thought-provoking
mm-hmm.
and will create space for people to have discussion and open their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and we're changing the model of leadership. We don't have like, this is very interesting.
Mm.
So you know how most nonprofit arts organizations pay the CEO, pay the ED,
mm-hmm.
and then pay the fundraiser,
mm-hmm.
and pay the lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
And we have decided that we pay the musicians and artists first,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, teaching artists as well. Mm-hmm. And then we will have a non-pay staff until set time that we can justify the existence of these people monetarily, mm-hmm. which is usually the other way around.
Right.
So
that's great.
All of the leadership council, so-called the people on the board, are just complete volunteers, experts.
So you're a 501c3?
We're applying for it right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are now a Oregon nonprofit corporation.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's so wonderful to meet you. I'm so happy to be sharing the information about the Big Mouth Society. And is there a fee to attend the event on the 29th at Holocene?
There isn't.
It's free and it's from 4 to 8 p.m.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes. So yeah. Go to big-mouth.org to RSVP.
Uh-huh.
And enjoy the Holocene. Have some tacos and some drinks.
That
and enjoy
wonderful.
All the arts.
Yeah, thank you so much for making time to talk to me.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.